Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Monday, October the 11th, Columbus Day. We'll be talking today, as we like to do once a week, with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. I'm sure that Bill has a few New York stories about Columbus. Columbus Day is always a big day in New York. Obviously, some bad economic news that came out on Friday that really, really could not have come at a worse time for the Biden administration. They kept, you know, the Biden administration, they just keep getting hit hard between the eyes. I don't know what's going to happen, but they just seem to be really going from one thing to another, and it doesn't seem to get any better anytime soon. Former President Trump gave a little rally over the weekend in Iowa. That's kind of a strategic place to have a rally, but I guess he had a pretty good turnout. I didn't see it, but I understand that it went very well. So let me say happy Columbus Day to a fellow, I guess we would call ourselves Eurocentric, Bill, people whose descendants are European, I guess, in one way or another. Mine from Spain via Cuba, yours from Europe via New York. But we celebrate Columbus Day today, Bill. I've always enjoyed this day. I like Christopher. I think he's a good guy.
Yeah, my Apple calendar, which I'm looking at, actually has it listed as Indigenous Peoples Day. So I guess to be woke, I mean, well, it has both. I'm looking at it, and this is the one supplied with my computer, Columbus Day and Indigenous Peoples Day. So I guess we will have to celebrate both. And but always in speaking in public, in order not to be sent out and executed, we should say that we understand that Columbus was a bad guy who really discovered America so as to take back natural resources to the native country. And everybody knows that's the case. I mean,
right.
How could it possibly be anything else? Columbus Day. We used to live I lived in Manhattan. I lived right near Columbus Circle, which is a thoroughfare at the southwest corner of Central Park, and it abuts Central Park and Central Park South. Rather nice area, very nice area, and there have been attempts over the years by the left wing groups to have the statue of Columbus removed from Columbus Circle, because after all, if it's there, we are a dark society that must be eliminated. Those attempts have not yet succeeded, and one of the reasons is we have in New York a very large Italian-American community that is very vociferous about their defense of Columbus, and so far they have been able to stave off the drive to take down the statue. I don't know if that will continue, although if Eric Adams is our new mayor, and I think he probably will be based on the election next month. He is not in favor, from what I understand, of taking down that statue. So I think it's probably safe for a while. Now,
yeah.
I remember Columbus from having been taught about him in school, and also from the Ballantyne song. When the Yankees were on and sponsored by Ballantyne, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, and then went on that he drank Ballantyne beer. So that's how I learned about Christopher Columbus. He discovered America and drank Ballantyne. But
all right.
We never thought of Columbus as a particularly controversial character until the 1960s, when his name came up on the early woke list. Because the 60s really were just a precursor of what we have today. And now he's on the very woke list. But attempts to disown him and to takedown statues of him have not been all that successful.
No, I think in many places, you're right, in many places they've tried, but I think in New York City what happens, Bill, is that when they try to take down these statues, all these black Cadillacs start showing up. And,
yes.
and all of a sudden,
yes,
you know.
Yes, that's true. Yes, yeah. And all the musicians get out with their violin cases.
That's right.
All these, so many violinists in New York. It's amazing.
That's
and
right.
Yes, they do. And,
that's right.
And people understand there may be some cost to taking down, as opposed to taking down the statue of Theodore Roosevelt that used to stand in front of the Museum of Natural History.
Yeah.
That statue became controversial and is gone. It's just it's an amazing thing. We are seeing before us totalitarianism in action.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many Americans understand what it's about, but many do
right.
not and really don't care. And that is what frightens me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There are two very good pieces about Columbus that were written over the weekend. One is over at Powerline, that was really good. Talking about the reality of this day. And then Newt Gingrich, I understand, wrote another one. I haven't read that one yet. But what I find interesting is when they say Indigenous People Day, which one are they talking about? Because I guess they mean anybody who was living in this part of the world when Columbus got here. But the problem is a lot of these groups were not exactly nice to each other. It wasn't like
no.
they lived in the United States of indigenous states or indigenous. I mean, a lot of these people, for example, they practiced slavery, many of them. They were really, I mean, they would kill each other at a moment's notice. Just, I mean, a lot of people forget, how did Cortez get from the Gulf of Mexico to Mexico City? Because he was able to use the different groups that hated each other and basically used them to get to Mexico City. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm not going to defend a lot of the excesses that took place in the conquest of the Americas, as they like to call it. But I think they go too far when they present this romantic image of these people.
Oh, of course.
And one gets the impression that Moctezuma had an opposition party, that he tolerated an opposition party, and that there was a free press in the Aztec world, and that, you know, there were female members in Moctezuma's Supreme Court and all this kind of stuff, when in reality, everything about those societies is what these people hate about our society now, Bill.
Look, they're not terribly concerned about the truth. I mean, you have a lot of people in these movements that we see today, these left-wing movements, who have no concept of truth. Their concept of truth is what I'm told to do by the organization, by the party. They will tell me what the truth is, and I will accept it. And they believe in this, and they do it every day. I was just reading an article that was horrifying about American college campuses, how dumbed
yeah.
down they've become, and basically propaganda centers. And we have always said it can't happen here, but it is happening here, and I don't know how far this will go. And what we have seen this year, have we not, is as soon as parents begin to express concerns, Merrick Garland brings in the FBI. Well, we have to guard our public servants against violent attacks, as if people were making, military raids against anthropology departments. I mean, you know, it's not happening. But I'm frightened for the future of this country. I think you have now, in public service, people who don't believe in democracy. You certainly have that in universities and now even in high schools where they teach that democracy is really a form of white supremacy. I don't know what America is going to be. We have institutional failure on the part of the press, which doesn't report much of anything or show any great concern about this. We've seen it happen in other countries. We saw it happen in Germany, where we had a country of unbelievable level of civilization and mm-hmm. science and art descend into hell. I don't think that will happen here. I think anything that happens here will be slower, rather much more subtle, I think institutions will just be taken over one by one. I think we've seen that already. But in the end, it could result in the destruction of what we call the United States of America.
Well, and that, you know, that's always the strategy. If you want to defeat the United States, you don't do it with military power, because you're not going to be able to defeat the United States militarily. So what you do is you attack the institutions and try to destroy the country from within. And what scares me more than anything else, I still think the country will survive, because the next election could be the turning point of that. I mean, if the next election reelects the people who are in power right now, I will feel very depressed. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think there is going to be a change. But it does worry me when you look at a campus, I cannot remember the college right now, where they're back to segregation. I mean, black kids have their own dorms. And I'm saying, wait a minute. Didn't that used to be illegal? I mean, at one time, wasn't that the reason they wrote that opinion about Topeka versus Kansas, Bill?
Yes, Brown versus Topeka Board.
Yeah, there you go.
Case. And that was the great desegregation case. Yes, I remember during the great days of the real civil rights movement that the fight was against segregation. Mm-hmm. Segregation was seen as simply an extension of the Reconstruction era, and was extraordinarily damaging to African Americans, because the opposition said, the people in power in the South said, that segregated schools were equal, you know, separate but equal. Well, anybody looking at those schools knew they weren't equal, mm-hmm. and that segregation was done basically to uphold white privilege and to depress black participation. Now, that was then, and this is now. Now, for some reason, some African-American students have gotten into their heads that what they really need on college campuses is segregation. And they need, for example, lounges and student centers that will be open only for them. And they don't seem to know, and I don't blame them. It wasn't taught to them. That they don't seem to understand what segregation has meant to black America over the centuries, mm-hmm. and what it does to people. So I guess we'll have to put up this as well. It's not a new idea. I remember that on I went visiting the Columbia campus, where I have a degree from Columbia, and I passed the Malcolm X Lounge, and this must have been 30 years ago or so, 35 years ago. And I looked in, there was nobody there, so I saw a door handle, and I tried to turn it, and it was locked. And I later learned you cannot come in there and have a key unless you are black. And I thought, what a foolish idea. What a terrible thing to teach to people, as damaging to blacks as it is to whites. But I think that has now been expanded. Now there's a wanting for black floors in dormitories, whole buildings, black classes, of course. And I can only say that I think that in the end, the very people asking for these things are going to be damaged by them, and I hate to see that.
Right. A couple of thoughts here, Bill, about that while you were discussing it. The first one is, it seems to me that I wonder what these kids, when they go home and they talk to their parents, because their parents would be people in their 50s or 60s, let's say, who obviously grew up in the civil rights movement. I wonder when they go home to their parents and say to them, hey, mom and dad, you know, we have segregated dorms or whatever. I wonder how many of their parents look at them and say, really? You know, I remember when that was a bad idea. You know, so that's the first thing. But the other thought I have is that it seems to me that what's happening in so many of our colleges is a breakdown in authority, that the people running these colleges just don't seem to have the guts to put down many of these kids and say, look, you're attending our school. These are the rules. If you don't like it, hey, there's another college down the street. Go there. That's what I think a lot of it is. It's just a lack of adult authority. Because anybody comes to me and says, look, you know, let's say one of my kids had come to me and said, you know, hey, you know, we're going to have, you know, an old Cuban dorm. And I would have said, is that a joke? Really? Is that what you're going to do? I would have said, that's a joke. I mean, that cannot be true.
Yes.
You need to meet other people. And I think, it seems like there's nobody in these colleges, I shouldn't say nobody, but not many, I should say, in positions of authority who are willing to stand up to these people and say, you're crazy. If you want a segregated school, you're crazy. That's not what we are. And that's what I see happening, Bill. There's a lack of authority, almost as if the adults have decided to let the children run the college. And these are not children. These
yes,
are 20-something people, but they're acting like children.
That's right. But the administration is afraid of those children. They're afraid that they may be violent. And I have to say also that while I think a lot of what you say is true, that the administrations are made up of timid people who are afraid, there are also, unfortunately, a lot of new administrations in colleges that believe in this stuff.
Yeah,
they go right along with it. And that is what I'm afraid of. There will be a tipping point at some juncture where the colleges are beyond redemption. And I don't know when that point will be. Now, on the other hand, as you say, our salvation may run through free elections if the elections are truly free. Mm-hmm. You know, if the Democratic plan to revamp the electoral system goes through, it may be unconstitutional. I think it is unconstitutional. But if it goes through, then the federal government will be running all our elections. And I think what you're going to find basically are party line elections. And mm-hmm. that is very dangerous. I do believe we are in a very, very dangerous state. You know, I was just thinking yesterday, there are some reports out of China of a new variant or extension of the coronavirus, and apparently it is shutting down some institutions in China. I don't know if it's true, and I have not seen corroborating evidence. But one of the things we really must do as a nation in restoring ourselves after, if we want to restore ourselves after the virus, is to nail down this issue of where the virus came from in the first place. And I have no evidence whatever, no personal evidence, that this was an attack on the United States, but I certainly don't think we should rule it out, because look at the damage that's been done to this country. Any enemy wishing to do damage and not go to war formally would do something like this. And I don't think we can rule out the possibility that there are intentional forces at work. I would have to see proof, but we should be pursuing that question, because we couldn't go through another pandemic now without really possibly destroying the country. And I ask myself the question, how come so many people on the left, left-wing activists, were so prepared for the pandemic? How come they knew exactly what to do to exploit it, to use it, to twist things their own way? All those riots last summer, the Black Lives Matter movement, which seems accountable to nobody, all at the same time. I have to say that I think investigations should be held, you know, hopefully by news organizations, which may or may not want to do it.
But right.
I'm beginning to get the creeps that some of the what we would call the whack jobs out there on the right may have been a little bit more right than a little bit more correct than we gave them credit for being, but I want to see an investigation.
Well, and in so many ways, I mean, there's like a Pulitzer Prize out there for a reporter who takes this seriously and actually decides to do an investigation, I would think. I mean, there are some great books out there that could be published about all of this. My biggest fear about the pandemic was that it was used to get Trump out. Because it was the only
yes.
thing they had. I mean, if you go back to March of 2020, they had nothing on Trump. Trump was going to be reelected.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden this pandemic shows up, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's almost as if in like as everybody was, you know, singing from the same hymn book. They were all after Trump and after Trump, and they gave Biden basically a pass on the pandemic, and everything was Trump, and everything that Trump said was idiotic, and everything that Trump said was stupid. Everything that Fauci said was profound, and Fauci is the genius.
Yes.
And I mean, that's
it
kind of what we...
Me.
Yeah, I mean, a year later, that's what it looks to me, Bill.
Well, I think you're right, and what it reminds me of is the situation in 2008 when Obama was elected. The
mm-hmm.
campaign was proceeding, and all of a sudden, right in the middle of the campaign, there was an economic collapse.
That's right.
And I've always wondered, is this purely a coincidence, or was it the manipulation of markets? I don't know. I don't have the proof. And the sad fact is we have such institutional failure in journalism today that we may never find out. They don't have an interest in investigating anything that isn't on the right. And that institutional failure can cost this country its existence.
Yeah, it seems like the only thing they're interested in is January the 6th.
Yes.
You know, it seems like, you know, I think the country has moved beyond that. But it seems like every time you watch Chuck Todd or one of these people, they're always investigating January the 6th. And I keep asking myself, really? What else is there to know about January the 6th? I mean, we've looked into all of it so many ways. I mean, why not do something else? But I do think it became very politicized. Like you, I want to know what happened, and I don't really care who's at fault. I just want to know what happened, because you're right. The timing of it could not have been better for the enemies of the United States. I'll just put it that way. The damage
Absolutely.
That has been done to the country, not just the unfortunate death of 600,000 people, obviously, but the economy, the damage has just been devastating. We'll talk about the economy in a minute, but it seems like if you wanted to defeat Trump, much like if you wanted to elect Obama in 2008, it was either great timing or it was premeditated, Bill. I don't know, but it's not evil to think that way, Bill.
No, it isn't. And in the case of the press of 2008, which was anemic and refusing to ask any serious questions of the new god, Barack Obama,
yes.
It got so bad that even Saturday Night Live, which is a liberal organization, was doing sketches about the press. and about how obsequious they were. I mean, Mr. Obama, are you comfortable at the table? Maybe we get you another chair, Mr. Obama. I mean, that was the kind of situation we had. We really had no journalism in that campaign. And when the economic collapse occurred, nobody asked any serious questions. And after a while, you do begin to say, wait a minute, maybe some of these conspiracy theorists may have a point. I'm not saying they do. I have not seen the evidence, but I think I'd like to get some evidence.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. When all of the – when everything points in one direction, then
That's right.
against McCain and now against Trump, you have to – you know, you have to ask the question. I think it's only fair to ask the question, you know, why did that banking crisis occur the first week after October when McCain had gone up by 1 point in the polls? I mean, maybe it's – like you say, maybe it's just a crazy coincidence. But McCain was doing pretty well at that moment, that first week of October. They had just had that foreign policy debate where McCain came across, of course, as a much better prepared man to be president. And all of a sudden, he was up by 1 point in the polls, and all of a sudden, there's a bank collapse, Bill. Maybe it happened that way,
well,
but I wouldn't mind a few questions.
Well, you know, there are many detectives who will tell you they don't believe in coincidences. And Alfred Hitchcock used to say about that in movies, he would say, people will believe a coincidence at the beginning of a movie, but not at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. And I think we're, you know, as we proceed through the movie, we're seeing more and more coincidences. I mean, all of a sudden, there is this deep concern about the violence inflicted on America by mamas and dads at school board meetings. I mean, you know, we've got situations where cities get inflamed. Portland is practically gone. People are leaving Seattle in droves, but the big threat to America is not any of that, and it's certainly not China. The big threat to America is parents at school board meetings, and we must bring in the FBI,
right.
Because otherwise we're going to die as a country. And you see this, you don't know whether to laugh or cry, but these people are serious, and I am awaiting what I know is going to occur, the first arrest of a mother at a school board meeting, if not an arrest, a visit by the FBI, which scares the hell out of her. Well, we just want to ask you a few questions about the people who were at the meeting. Certainly
right.
not you, but other people who may share your views. And then they say, you know, we feel more comfortable asking these questions down at the headquarters. And all of a sudden, you're marched to an FBI office. I think it's not long before that happens, and it's going to scare the hell out of people, which would seem to be the objective.
And I'm sure that they will ask this poor mother, who is simply concerned about her kids, they will ask her, by the way, did Donald Trump have something to do with your visit to the school board?
Yes.
And pretty soon, you know,
yes.
they'll be blaming Trump as if Trump is behind all these school board meetings, just like everybody knows that he was behind the so-called insurrection of January the 6th.
The insurrection of January 6th.
Yeah, he was behind that. Everybody knows that he told those people to go down and burn the Capitol. Everybody knows that he told them that.
Of course, yes. And it's interesting, by the way, I think when the FBI investigated, they found out that many of the people who invaded the Capitol were gun owners, but that they all left their guns at home. Now,
right.
The next time we have an insurrection, I have to talk to those people. They've got to tie a string around their finger. Remember to bring your guns, please. You know, that's what you need at an insurrection. It's terrible.
That's right.
Modern insurrection.
Also, another indication that gun owners actually respect the law, because I'm sure there's a sign at the Capitol that says you cannot bring your gun. So they decided to leave it in their car. Bill, we're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the economy, not good news that came out on Friday. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Bill, I got to tell you a funny story, getting back to the insurrection for a minute before we move on. My father told me a funny story one time. One time I said to my dad, what was it like? You know, what was it like those early days of the so-called revolution? You know, were many people, you know, getting shot at? And my dad says, you know, more revolutionaries were killed celebrating the victory because they got drunk and they were driving their cars, that more revolutionaries were killed driving their cars drunk than actually fighting the revolution.
Yes.
And and sometimes that, you know, what I see of this insurrection, it reminds me of that story that my dad told me about, you know. Sometimes these insurrections are in people's minds. You know, it seems like the left has gone nutty now, and they keep using that word insurrection. But what I see is just a bunch of idiots who got into the Capitol because it wasn't protected, Bill. And thank God that it was those people, not a bunch of real terrorists who would have actually killed people with their guns, Bill.
That's true. That's true. No, I think from the first minute, the so-called insurrection story was a creation of CNN and some others, and they have just stuck to it. They still keep on referring to the insurrection of January 6th. There was no insurrection. That does not mean we defend some of the reckless behavior, as you said, of some of the people. But the country is not in danger of being overthrown by Trump supporters. It really isn't. I mean, now they're going to play that game again. They're getting ready to play it, that if Trump runs for office, the country could be taken over by racists. I saw nothing racist about his administration. He did more for black people than any president ever did.
Right.
And he's called a racist. But the condition the country is in is terrible. It's just terrible. I don't like to use maximalist language, but I really don't think I've seen it this bad because of institutional failure, the failure of institutions to do what they're supposed to do.
That's right. And one of the biggest failures, and it couldn't come at a worse time for the country or politically for the Biden administration, was the economic report that came out Friday. And, you know, you had these people expecting, I guess, 500,000 jobs, and we ended up with 194. That was bad enough, Bill, but when you look at these numbers, 11 million jobs are available and 7 million people are unemployed. That doesn't make sense to me, Bill. I mean, what that says to me is that there's a bunch of people who don't want a job, because when you have 11 million jobs out there and 7 million people unemployed, I think in the Great Depression, a lot of Americans would have given anything to have had 11 million jobs available, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But we have a very, very pampered society. And we have a society, many of whose members clearly don't want to go back to work, maybe for good reason. I'm not unsympathetic if conditions were bad. I mean, we still get packages from a company, Amazon, where conditions are apparently very bad in their warehouses, and we kind of look away, so we shouldn't be hypocritical about it. But the economy is weak, and I think one of the reasons it's weak is that corporations themselves, no matter how cynical they can become, and they can become very cynical, really don't know if they're going to have much support if the economy comes back strong. Right now, the Democratic Party is happy to take corporate contributions, but the fact of the matter is corporations to exist have to invest in the future. They have to invest in certain areas where their headquarters are, in certain states. They have to believe in what they're doing and work hard at it. And I don't see that attitude in America anymore. I really don't. Maybe we can come back and there'll be a renaissance in America. But that may come in spite of the fact that the word renaissance will probably be banned by
right.
the thought police. But
that's
maybe
right.
there will be a renaissance. But I don't see where it's coming from.
Well, it is regional if it's going to come from anywhere. It seems to be more regional than national. Because, you know, we just had Tesla, you know, the electric car company, decided to move to Texas. And when they were asking the owner of the company about it, he sort of said, well, the rent and the cost of living is just too high for my people in San Francisco. They just cannot, you know, I cannot
yes.
hire people. It's difficult to find workers out there, and it's a little bit easier in Texas. So you do seem to be seeing this regional renaissance. I mean, if you look at these numbers, the numbers in Texas are better than the numbers in the nation, but we still have too many people who are not working despite the number of job openings. And there's something I don't understand. How could you have, let's say, a year ago, you had just about everybody working who wanted to work? I mean, you had 3.5% unemployment. I mean, the economists tell you that 4.5 is full employment, so if you're at 3.5, that's, I guess, beyond full employment. And now you have unemployment rate of 4.8 on Friday, but 7 million people are unemployed. Doesn't make any sense to me. Somebody's choosing not to work, Bill, and that's not good for the country.
I think that's true because they're getting so many benefits in some states, not all, but they're getting benefits. It sometimes is better for them not to work than to work. And that you don't want to get into a situation like that because then you have the kind of a framework that was once described to me by a Norwegian about Stockholm. He said half of Stockholm takes care of the other half of Stockholm. And he didn't say that as a compliment to the socialist principles. And I don't want to see that happen here, and yet I think it is beginning to happen here.
Well, I was talking to a couple who have a restaurant here in the area. It's an Italian restaurant. And I was talking to them, and I said, how difficult is it to get workers? And the lady said, I guess the lady is the one who is involved in the HR department or the hiring area. And she said, it's impossible. You hire somebody on Monday, and then on Tuesday, they don't show up because they can get money at home. Or, you know, there's going to be a lot of inflation because of wages. Because people expect to be making from a restaurant whatever they were making from the government, and that's not going to happen. So it is a real problem, and my biggest concern is what this is doing to people. Not so much the economy. The economy is bad, but I've always felt that a job is better than sitting at home collecting a check from the government. I think that all things
Absolutely.
Being equal, a person working, there's more dignity in work than there is sitting at home watching whatever you're watching on TV, getting a direct deposit check. I just don't think that that's as good for the country or for the person as getting up in the morning and going to work, Bill.
Yes, a job gives you dignity. It also gives you an opportunity to get another job because when you're working, it's easier to get another job to improve yourself. It makes contacts for you. It sees things, lets you see things that are out there that might allow you to grow in the future. Working always has, look, I'm not going to say every job is wonderful. They're not. We know there are a lot of rotten jobs. But work gives you a certain dignity, a certain financial stability, and it shows you more of the world around you. And people have gotten great ideas for companies by being on a job and seeing where a need was. So sure, but the country is in a very strange psychological state today. And I think for the first time I'm hearing people say, you know, maybe we're cooked. Maybe we've had our 250 years and now it'll all be declined. I hate to think of it that way, but I think I look around me and I don't see much prospect for improvement.
Well, if that were to happen, I think you might very well see what many people have said and the possibility that the country breaks up into regions. Because
yes.
We do seem to be, you know, we do seem to be separate countries. When you look at different states and you look at, you know, how I'm saying Texas because that's where I live, but Texas is obviously very different than California. It used to be because
very, very much so.
But it isn't just because they have nice weather and we have terrible summers. You know, it isn't because they have the Dodgers and we've got the Rangers. It's not just for that reason. It's because they have a different mindset out there, or at least the politicians do. And the country, I mean, I can see where it reaches a point. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself with this, but I can see where it reaches a point where the union is no longer mutually beneficial. And then people say, you know what, let's just create. I mean, if you think about it, the United States as a country, the fact that there's 50 states, four time zones, it's really kind of an exception in history. The more logical thing would have been for North America to break up into a bunch of countries like Africa or South America or Europe. And the fact that it was able to sustain itself as a country is a tribute to the Constitution. But if we're no longer a country, what's the point of being a country, Bill?
That's exactly right. And I think breaking up into enclaves is already happening. I think it may be our future. On the other hand, our future may simply be to very silently be taken over by China, which will run our affairs without our even knowing it. And being told by these left-wing front groups, I have no problem about having my decisions made by our Chinese brothers and sisters. I love that phrase when they start with the brothers and sisters. The brothers and sisters will take your head off in 2 seconds if they had a chance.
Right.
I try not to predict the future because I don't like people who make predictions and then tell you as predicted here, and you go back and you look, they've made 20 predictions and one came out right. I don't like to make predictions, but we don't seem to have an ability right now to change and move in the right direction. We will if we elect a good conservative next year, because they will shake things up, at least we hope so. But I'm not so sure these elections are going to be as great for us as we think they are. You know, as election time comes closer, people tend to return home to their parties. If the elections are controlled by the federal government, I know there are going to be problems. I think we've got to fight these elections, especially the 2022 election coming up, fight these elections as if we're 20 points behind in every race and really fight like hell, because the country's future is really dependent on it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're exactly right. I feel very uncomfortable about what's happening in the country. When you look at the president of the United States, there's nothing inspirational about this person. I mean, it's almost as if he's just going through the motions. And then you have a vice president. Over the years, I've always looked at the vice president as the person who could take over, you know, let's say in the event of an emergency or in the event of death or whatever. And over the years, you know, I felt pretty comfortable when Reagan was president, Bush could take over. The same with Cheney and the second Bush and with Pence. And even with Clinton, I mean, Gore was not a radical figure. But it just seems like right now that I have no confidence in the lady vice president. I think there would be panic, honestly, in the Democrat Party if something were to happen to Mr. Biden and she would take the oath of office. I think there would be panic.
Oh, I agree.
because I don't think they like her any more than – I mean, I don't necessarily dislike her. It's not a personal thing about her. She is a little arrogant, I think. And this little show that she did with – did you watch her do that thing with kids talking about the future? I mean, that's almost like something out of Saturday Night Live, Bill.
That's right. And she's trying to be the new Mr. Rogers. And look, I think there would be a kind of panic if she became president. The good part would be she couldn't make a do anything because nobody would be able to find her. You know, Madam President, Madam President, the Chinese are attacking. Madam President, you're not there. Where are you, Madam President? Oh, the president has gone to a beauty salon in California. I mean, she's never around. She missed a big meeting last week that was being held in Mexico about border issues, a meeting that was attended by our Secretary of State. I mean, don't you think she should have been there, or doesn't she she should have been there? She's the border czar and has never been to the border.
Right.
You get the feeling that she's not happy in the job. Maybe she'll resign. No, I think probably the only reason that she stays in office is to become president, which is a pretty good reason.
Mm-hmm. No, but I think you're right. I think that it is inconceivable to me that she didn't lead our delegation to Mexico City to talk about the – I mean, who else would have done that? I mean, that she would have been the perfect person, at not just because she's supposed to be in charge of that area, but she is the vice president. I remember when Reagan used to send Vice President Bush in some pretty important trips. He was representing the United States. And so you get the feeling, Bill, and I don't, I really have no idea what's going on. You get the feeling either she's miserably unhappy and has pretty much told the White House, look, I'm here. If you pass away, I'll take over. But that's it. That's all I'm going to do. I'm just going to sit at the house and do whatever I want to do. And don't call me because I don't answer phone calls. Unless I get a phone call from the Supreme Court justice saying, "Hey, we need to swear you in," or but the other point, Bill, I wanted to make very quickly before I hear your reply. I just wanted to say maybe this is on purpose. Maybe the White House is saying keep her away because she's a problem. I don't know. I have no idea which one it is, but neither one is good, Bill.
Well, there are different ways of getting rid of the problem. And one of them is one you just mentioned. If there is a resignation on the Supreme Court or a death on the Supreme Court, Biden can appoint her. Now, that doesn't mean she has to take the job. Remember, they cannot force you to be a Supreme Court justice. But I think she could probably be prevailed upon. They could say, look, Kamala, put away your blocks for a minute and let's talk about this. The president wants you to serve on the Supreme Court and you don't want to serve on the Supreme Court, but they can make life miserable for you. Why don't you just serve on the Supreme Court? And she might be compelled to do it. It is a way of getting rid of people. But so far, you would think that she would want to go all out to do a great job to show what she can do. But yet there is no great job there. I mean, you hear about her very rarely. And when you do hear about her, you have a situation that you described of her going to a class and acting like one of the children.
Mm-hmm. And this whole I thought this opportunity with the border would have been the perfect opportunity for her to show some leadership skills, because she could have come in and been the visible, person on the border and done some things that made sense. But she doesn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole, which is maybe tells you how bad things in the border are. I don't know. But she is a strange person. I've never seen a vice president like this. Maybe that we've had other instances. I'm not saying that it's the first time. But not that I can recall. I mean, the ones that I recall, even Biden was given a few things by Obama. I mean, wasn't he in charge of that summer of jobs or whatever that was, the recovery summer or whatever that was?
He was given something to do. Pence was given a lot to do, actually, by Trump and did it very, very well. Let me see. Going back to Gore was given a great deal to do by Clinton, and also, I have to say, did it rather well. You had the question of Dan Quayle, who was vice president for the first Bush
yeah.
You know, accession presidency, he unfortunately he became a laughingstock for no good reason. He was a serious man. He was a thoughtful man, but he had a tendency to engage in gaffes, and he mm-hmm. became kind of the pinata of the Democratic Party. So there wasn't much there. Reagan did use Bush to a certain degree before Reagan. Well, before Reagan, we had that whole – you had Jimmy Carter, and I do think he – used Fritz Mondale effectively to the extent that Carter could be effective in anything. I mean, he was one of the most ineffective presidents mm-hmm. we've had. And then you go back to Nixon, who had his own set of problems. He had
Agnew.
I can't remember the name of Agnew, Spiro Agnew.
Spiro Agnew.
I think he
yeah.
sent him on Spiro Agnew. He sent them on certain missions, and Agnew was supposed to bring back the bodies to be buried properly. And you had others. Then you go back to Jack Kennedy, whose vice president was Lyndon Johnson, an enormous power in his own right. The power center around Johnson was actually greater than the power center around Kennedy himself.
Mm. Yeah, I've never seen anything like this, and I guess I've never seen any situation like this where there's so much of a question mark around the vice president.
Oh, yes.
That, you know, I've just never seen it. Maybe if you go back to the 19th century, you might be able to find somebody like that, but certainly not in recent times. One topic that I did want to get into, Bill, you wrote about this, and that is what's going on in the Democrat Party. You know, you had this little problem with the debt limit and the Republicans. And Mitch McConnell is catching a lot of heat for that, although that may turn out to be a smart move in about 90 days. You know, it may all seem a lot different than 90
yes.
days. That, but
yes,
but
absolutely.
The Democrats are in, I don't know how else to say it, Bill. The Democrats are in just total, complete meltdown. I have no idea how Biden can put this back together, Bill.
I don't think he can, because he might be able to solve to some degree some of the smaller problems he has, but there are problems coming down the line, certainly in foreign policy. I mean, we had our diplomats negotiating with the Taliban yesterday and assuring them of some aid. Isn't that incredible? We're giving aid to the Taliban.
Right.
I mean, what geniuses these are. And there are economic problems. You have problems of law and order in many of our cities.
Yes.
I don't
you do.
See where things can get better unless they get better on their own. You know, the economy can improve on its own as people in private industry move ahead. But other than that, on the normal governmental functions, Biden seems completely incompetent, really completely incompetent.
And when you look at this polling data, and I mean, again, polls are polls, and we don't want to bank are, you know, we don't want to hang our suit on polls all the time because they can be wrong, as we've learned. But it looks like where he's really getting hurt is in this competence issue. It isn't so much that
yes.
people disapprove of what he's doing. Because, look, at one point, you may remember this, Bill, but at one point in the summer of 83 or the spring of 83, when the recession was really hitting bottom under President Reagan, he was at 37% at one point. And, you know, two years later or 18 months later, he wins a 49-state landslide. But he,
right.
you know, you could see that he was coming back. The question is,
yes.
I don't see – how does Biden come back? You know, where are the elements of his coming back? I mean, what are the signs that 6 months from now – he's going to be at, let's say, 52% on Rasmussen. I don't see it. I think it more than likely he's going to be exactly where he's at, 42 or 44, whatever. Or he may be even lower because some of these problems are not getting better. I mean, they're just not
yes.
getting better, Bill.
Well, I think that will depend a lot on what the Republican Party does.
That's true.
Now, remember, we've talked in the past about how hard the Republican Party works to lose elections. And it has happened before, and it can happen again. I just have a bulletin here. Rasmussen just published its a Monday poll, 41% approval for President Biden. 41%. This is really getting into an area. The other polls, by the way, are pretty close. They really are. This mm-hmm. is getting into an area that for any president is quite dangerous. He is not up for re-election for another 2 years, of course. If in fact he runs again, but he is certainly his situation will influence the Democratic Party next year, and it looks like a very bad situation. I also have seen in the last week or so some prominent Democrats starting to distance themselves from the president. You certainly saw it in Virginia with Terry McAuliffe saying, well, yeah. the president isn't popular and all the rest, as if he'd never met the man, you know. He's practically son of Biden. And I saw that United States Senator Cardin of Maryland made a critical comment just yesterday saying, regarding the treatment of Senator Sinema in Arizona, he said, mm-hmm. I don't think this is normal, and I don't think it should be considered normal. You may see that happen. You may see a distancing from President Biden, which could, completely split the Democratic Party. Also, speaking of splits, I am amazed, aren't you, that there hasn't been any talk of a third party.
Yes, I am
too. If there's ever
a
time we needed a third party, it's now. I mean, right. A new center-left party could probably do very well, but there is no talk of it at all.
No, you're right. I am amazed. I am amazed also. By the way, when you were talking about Democrats criticizing President Biden, it kind of reminded me of a book that I read about the election of 1968, how that sort of began to happen, how a lot of Democrats began to walk away from then-President
yes.
Johnson. So you could see a situation like this. Now, again, we're not talking about his reelection yet, but the congressional elections, I can tell you, if you go to South Texas, President Biden is not very popular. And that's largely Democrats down there.
I wouldn't imagine so. They're concerned about the border, as are most Americans concerned about the border.
Yes.
And they're concerned about other things as well. All we need is one more foreign policy disaster, and this is the president who can create it.
Yes.
And I don't know what you do after that. But again, a lot will depend on the Republicans. They have to have excellent candidates next year. They have to go at it zealously. They have to run as if they're 20 points behind, and they have to understand that in politics there are no silver medals. It's not like the Olympics where you get a prize for second place. It has to be deadly. You have to go out and win. I think it could be done. I think the Democrats could at least take control of the House, but it's going to be a brutal fight, and we have to be ready for it.
Well, it's going to be brutal, like you say. You just have to – you don't take anything for granted because things could change. But the way it looks from my view of the the way I look at it is that I think it's going to get worse for President Biden. Like you say, China goes into Taiwan, and God only knows what happens, and that's something that could happen. China could go into Taiwan. That's not
right.
an issue that we should overlook. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. Oh my gosh, so much to talk about. We didn't even get to. Well, we did talk about Vice President Harris. Yeah, we did talk about
yes,
her. And I'm sure that if China invades Taiwan, that she's nowhere to be seen. I'm pretty sure of that.
No, she will probably rush to Chinatown in San Francisco and say, I hear you have problems. You have problems.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
First of all, does she know where Taiwan is? You know, I guess she probably does. But Taiwan is something that really has to be introduced to the American people by the press. And as usual, they're falling down on the job. They really are.
And this is what is so scary, Bill. And we don't have a lot of time today. I like to pick this up the next time. So if the Chinese are going to invade Taiwan,
sure.
I hope they give us another week so we can talk about it next week. But this is such an amazing point, I think, that you brought up. Because if, in fact, China goes into Taiwan, and that's a growing possibility, we are probably going to have to send troops at some point. And the American people don't have a clue of this. I remember when President Bush in 2003 spent the entire year preparing the country for Iraq, saying this is why
yes.
we need to do it. And, you know, I thought that at the very least he prepared the country for it. I would love to see President Biden give some speeches saying this is why this matters and that's why we have to defend it. But I mean, I think a lot of Americans, if the Chinese went into Taiwan, I think a lot of Americans would say, okay, so what does that mean?
That's right. Why is it our business?
Yeah, that's another point.
That's
another
what presidents
point.
They show people why it is their business.
That's right.
And
you're exactly
what
right
about implications
that.
It has for the United States. I agree.
Absolutely.
But we'll talk about it next week.
It is, because I think it could very well happen this year. I mean, it could be very well some. It could be a topic that we're talking about in one of our shows in the future, Bill. China going to Taiwan. I don't think that's not a crazy possibility. I think, in fact, it's looking to me more like a likely possibility.
I agree with that.
All right, Bill. Nothing about the Dodgers today, except that the team that known as the Brooklyn Dodgers is in a very good playoff series against the team known as the New York Giants. So
they are imposters still, Bill.
They are imposters. Okay, Bill. Have a great week, and thank you as always for your time. It's always so appreciated.
My pleasure.
So your opinions are always very valued.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, another week. Well, I'm sure something will happen next Monday when we get together with Bill. Have a wonderful week, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.